Hello, is that
Hello.
better?
That's better, aye.
He's any
What's
want
happening?
to, he's any want to see me in my dressing gown, do you?
No, definitely not. Do you want me to start, or do you want to talk me into it, or...?
No, just shut the fuck up.
Derek, can you give me two minutes, because I'm bursting for a pee, so just give me a wee second, all right? That's better. Right, well, how long's that? An hour and 52, so you can take a few minutes off for me having a pee, and you can take maybe an hour off that for me talking shite.
Aye, I was going to do that anyway.
That's fine. Right, well, you can just get fired in then, mate.
Aye, but what about doing the pod?
Oh, the old ones are the best, eh? Aye, Derek says he will be out on both dates as he is a JK.
No far for the truth.
I'm about to send you something on WhatsApp to let you see what I bought the day. I'm absolutely in love with it. Right.
Is that the sex dolls again?
What was her name again? Inflatable Ingrid.
That's it.
No.
Right, is this Betty now?
No, it's no. No, she's up the stair. Right, hold on a minute.
Hi folks, and welcome to the new edition, Season 4, Episode 8 of the iReady podcast. As ever, I'm your host Derek, and with me is my co-host Dave.
Derek, is this three pods in the space of a month?
Month and a half, I think, aye. Well, less than a month, aye.
Good lord.
I know.
Absolutely, we've never known it. As we said the last time, I'm still off work recovering from my operation, so this is probably the only reason that we've been able to get as many pods out as possible. So I don't know how much we've got to talk about. I think we've only got maybe two games to cover. So I've got a superb classic match that I sat and watched today, a game back in 1999, absolute cracker with some fantastic players on show, so we'll get into that later on.
Just on news of your operation, Dave, how's your boobs doing?
They're a lot better since I've had a reduction, Derek, but, you know, didn't feel quite as top heavy anymore, so...
Brilliant. Yes, just before we go down that infamous tunnel, just obviously, the last podcast, we never had a manager, and guess what? We've got a new manager now.
Exactly. We spoke about him at great length the last time, didn't really know much about him, but certainly going by everything I've seen and I've watched his press conference a couple of times, he's certainly looks and sounds the part, Derek, and going by his first game in charge, it's probably the best I think we've played all season.
Yep.
But I'll let you get into that one.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've watched all his stuff as well at the start of when he first came in, and you know, he certainly speaks a great game. He hints of the deficiencies that were lacking with the team and in training from the old regime. Great training videos from RTV. Basically, one of them was showing that the team were working on pressing, and you know, it certainly was put to good use against Hamilton. I've always said Rangers historically have never been able to play against a team that press us and chase every single ball. So if we're going to start playing that version now, it's going to be fantastic. So
no, it was good to watch, Derek. But as I say, you'll get into that when you're covering the games that we went. But I've been very impressed so far. As I say, not just by the game, but just by the whole professional manner that the guy has.
Andy does actual dossiers on other teams. He does opposition research.
Seriously?
Aye, I know. Who would have thunk it?
And he's got more than one plan.
I think so, aye.
Never known. It's never been known.
Just on that note, I think we've got to give Graham Murty a good bit of credit for the way he handled himself, apart from that backwards role, mind you.
Exactly.
Certainly, we did mention in the last pod that there was a wee hint of the team starting to actually gel under him, and we're playing slightly differently, and we're playing with a wee bit more thought and a wee bit more passion, and he certainly got that out of the team. So certainly, yep. I hope there's a role for him there somewhere, but we'll obviously get onto that.
Yes.
So, we'll go down the tunnel now and onto the pitch.
Yes!
First time. Yes, we left it at the last podcast. It was just before the game that I'm about to mention, which was Sunday the 12th of March. It was a one-each draw away to Celtic in the Premiership. We lined up Fotheringham, Hodgson, Hill, Wilson, Wallace, Tavernier, Heineman, Holt, Mackay, Miller, Wycorn. On the subs bench, it was Alnwick, O'Halloran, Dodu, Windass, Senderos, Bates and Forrester. Now, what was your thoughts on the outset, Dave? What was your thinking?
I think with both me and you thought, Derek, going by everything we heard in the press, and I'm not taking anything away from Celtic. I mean, I will talk about them because we were playing against them. We don't usually go out our way to speak about Celtic, but because this is a game we're covering, we will talk about them. They've been, you know, excellent all season. They've been extremely clinical in front of goal. They can manage to kill teams off very quickly. But we know that anything can happen in an Old Firm game. But there wasn't a lot of people, and I don't care what anyone says, there's everyone in the media, all the supporters, I think everyone wrote us off for the start of the match. They all thought we were going to go and get an absolute hiding. That maybe helped us a wee bit. But certainly the first 20 minutes, half an hour, I thought we were absolutely fantastic. Some of the, you know, we played really, really well, defended really well, and for Martin Wycorn having his shooting boots on, we could have been about two up before, you know, Celtic scored their first goal. But as I say, I'll let you summarise everything that happened. But I wasn't looking forward to it, Derek, and I had a bad feeling. I thought we would get beat. You know, yeah. I didn't think we would get hammered because, like you said, the team was starting to gel and the defence looked a lot more solid since Murty came in. We had stopped a lot of the tippy-tappy stuff. We were being a bit more direct, you know, getting the ball up. We'd stopped all the short corners, pushing things like that. So I thought to myself, at least if we did get a corner, we'd maybe have a chance of scoring. But I wasn't holding out much hope.
No, I think I said in the last pod as well that, you know, it was a case of going there hoping for a draw, and, you know, anything else was a bonus. So certainly, you know, we got the draw. So
yes.
Just on that note, on the 23rd minute, Wycorn had a good chance. That was his first chance. It was one-on-one with the keeper.
Great chance.
It was a good save, fair enough, but he just needed to be. But it was one of these Kenny Miller-type situations, maybe a wee bit too much time on the ball.
I thought that Martin Wycorn played really well in the game, Derek, apart from his misses, because, you know, he could have had, you know, two or three goals in that game if he'd have, you know, put away clear-cut chances. But he was a constant thorn in their side. He was very, he looked direct, he looked a lot sharper, faster, you know, and he had the power. And I was really quite impressed with Wycorn in the first half. Yeah. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed with the whole team, to be honest, up until Celtic scored.
Yeah.
And that's when it kind of, you know, just went away.
Yeah.
Kind of virtually like the last game we played against them as well. You know, Celtic did have a free kick in the 29th minute, and it was a good fingertip save onto the post by Fotheringham. Then Celtic got their goal in the 35th minute, and it was one of these things where I seen it happening all in slow motion, and
yeah,
as soon as Holt gave the ball away in the edge of the
yeah
box, you knew we were going to get punished.
And I think Holt took a lot of criticism for it, Derek, and I actually think he had a good game. It was just that one mistake, and unfortunately, like I said before the game, Celtic have been clinical, and that was the difference there, that, you know, one mistake and they punished us for it.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness to Armstrong, he's playing pretty well now from
yep,
what I'm hearing.
Yeah, no, he is, aye, and he was doing really well.
He was great in that game up until he came off, and it was a very well taken goal, a great shot, and hopefully he's got a, you know, not a good future at Celtic anyway, because he looks to be a decent player.
Aye.
As well, at one point in the half as well, I believe it was the first half, Scott Brown flicked his arm out, which, you know, arguably was deliberate or not, hit Holt right in the face with his elbow, and it wasn't picked up by the referee.
Nothing at all. No.
Not even being picked up by the compliance officer, even though there's clear video of it. So.
Exactly, yep.
Into the second half, a good save by Fotheringham in the 67th minute. The ball's kind of spilled into the box. It was about to go out. One of their defenders, I can't remember who it was, came over, and Dembele done one of the most obvious dives ever. Again, no yellow card, no retrospective video evidence used, even though it's clear for all to see.
Yes.
We're still no compliance officers looked at, and they done basically the exact same thing against the next game. You know, if it was the other shoe was on the other foot, you can guarantee that would have been, you know, video evidence.
Oh, yeah, aye. Without a shadow of a doubt. It was very, very quiet during the game, Dembele, you know, considering he is their sort of poster boy at the moment, the one that seems to turn it on in the big televised matches, the man that the Aussies worth £40 million. Big difference for me in this game was Danny Wilson basically done a man Martin job on him for what I saw.
Hill was it, no?
I was sure it was Wilson that was playing that. I thought Hill was sort of playing the more of the sort of sweeper role, just basically trying to mop anything up for the back. I thought it was Wilson that was kind of doing the thing. But regardless, in this game, the defence had him marked the whole time, and I think there was maybe only one or two instances that he managed to get away for the centre-halves, and, you know, he didn't really get a sniff. He had sort of one chance in the first half that fell sort of right in front of him, in front of Fodringham, but as you say, it was a good save. That was basically all he'd done, and I've listened to a few people talking about the game and the way that they broke it down, and Celtic's big problem was, as you say, Armstrong. They took Armstrong off when he, quite rightly, was one of the best players on the pitch. Everything was going through him, and for some reason he took him off. I don't think he was injured or anything like that, but one of the other podcasts they mentioned it, that, you know, the way that Celtic are at the moment, they weren't going to take off anybody else, or, you know, they would have been turned on, if you know what I mean, with the support, you know, their own supporters. They certainly weren't going to take Scott Brown off, and they weren't going to take Dembele off, and they wanted to get another striker on, because I think they really did think that they were going to hammer us, and it wasn't turning out that way.
No.
And they took off their best player, which was Armstrong, and I think that was a turning point for us, because that's when we came back into the game.
Yeah, on the 70th minute, there was Wycorn that was completely free in the box. I mean, there was a good, you know, 10 yards between him and any other player, which is more kind of reminiscent of our defence, you know, of the last kind of season. But he was completely free in the box. I can't remember who kind of crossed the ball into him, but it was slightly behind him, and he had a first time shot, and it was well saved by the keeper as well.
Yep.
That was on the 70th minute, and really from the 70th minute on, you know, we were, again, the better team. So we started off the first, you know, 30, 35 minutes, the better team. We were completely, I thought we just capitulated at the in-between times.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I put a tweet out saying that some of these players, you know, are really playing for their future, and you wouldn't believe it. And then from 70 minutes onwards, I thought we, you know, again, had the bulk of the game. That leads us into the 86th minute. It was great play by Tavernier. He gave the ball to Heineman, who hit a first time shot, saved by the keeper, but it was spilled right into the path of Clint Hill, who knocked it home from about 6 yards to make the game one each.
Yep, no, it was a great, I actually thought that Heineman had scored, but when he got into that position, it was a great pass through to Heineman, and a fantastic first touch by him to sort of just get to the side of the player, and he hit a tremendous shot, and I really did think he'd scored it. And when it was saved, I thought, oh God, this just isn't your game. But thankfully, it fell to the back post, and Big Clint slid in there and fired at home. Absolutely delighted, Derek. And as you say, for the 70th minute onwards, it was just us. We were, you know, piling the pressure on. And the goal came at just the right time for us, because it was if we hadn't scored then you know, I think that would have been it. I think it would have just been another one of the hard luck days, but thankfully it did go in at the right time.
Yep. Certainly, you know, I don't know if you've seen it, but the wee Lines girl behind the goal shouting abuse, you know, apparently, and there's a few sweary words apparently from lip readers in there, which, you know, all the media, you know, got on the back of, you know, straight away. It was a wee bit of fun, you know. Certainly she looked older than what normal kind of ball boys and ball girls were, and if she was old enough to you know, shout abuse at a grown man, she was certainly old enough to get an article written about her, you know, taking the mickey about that. Yet there are some Celtic minded bloggers out there that, you know, thought it was a disgrace and putting her personal safety at risk. Fuck off.
No, you know, exactly. I mean, I take it there was she wouldn't have been named or anything like that, Derek. It just have been, you know, slagging them off. It happened anywhere, but no, it was quite funny. I thought the one I thought was that somebody had drawn a comparison to the work of art, you know, the sort of screaming man with his two hands beside his feet, which was quite funny. But no, it was great. Big Clint scoring, and he just looked cool as anything when he scored. He was just sort of pointed after he scored. Absolutely brilliant. They were gutted, you know, that had happened, because they knew that we were, you know, right back in the game, and it took a lot of pressure off us, and it put the sort of the pressure back on them, because they, you know, after everything we'd heard, they were going to hammer us. That's all we had heard. Idiots like Frank McAvaney saying it was going to be 8-0 and stuff like that. It was great for us, and all credit, I think, to Graham Murty, because he did change it halfway through and flooded the midfield, and that's what happened for us. He changed things about in there, and that's what got us back on top, and no, it was great stuff.
The controversial moment of the game, Dave, was it a penalty or wasn't it a penalty?
Derek, hindsight is a great thing. It really is. Looking, getting video evidence from, you know, six or seven different angles in slow motion is a great thing. And it boiled over, and I had a bit, not a slagging match, but I put a wee thing out on my personal Facebook page, nothing to do with slagging off Celtic, just saying that I was pleased with the way that we had played. And I did put a wee cheeky comment saying, thank God that £40 million striker was they playing against us, just basically because he'd been anonymous. And I had a few Celtic fans that I know were going on saying, oh well, it always helps you when you've got your 12th man in the middle playing alongside you and stuff like that. So what I did look at, Derek, was the next again day. Obviously it had so much media scrutiny, this decision. And apparently, I mean, the one thing that I thought was absolutely hilarious was Brendan Rodgers coming out in the Sun saying that it was definitely a penalty, because Clint Hill said to him, oh, I got lucky there.
Aye.
So I don't know who you want to believe, if you want to believe the Sun newspaper, which I don't think we can, or you want to believe that Brendan Rodgers actually said that, or that Clint Hill actually said that to Brendan. I think that's...
Clint Hill did actually say he got lucky there, because he did confirm it on the on a press conference right after the game.
But the way
it was taken was by a lot of people is, well, I got lucky there, you know, I've seen it given, I've seen it not given, which is my personal view on it. You know, as you said, talking about hindsight, it's a case of we the public have seen it by multiple times, multiple angles, and still for me it's undecided. I've seen them given, I've seen them not given, and yeah, we would have been probably claiming for it as well.
But it all
depends on what the referee has seen at the time.
Yeah, who is the professional referee, the English professional ref that Sky Sports have on and they go, I think it's like once a week, is it Graham Poole his name is, or Graham Poole or something like that? He's an ex-referee down in England, and he was on Sky Sports News the next game day, and because it was a controversial decision, they let him have a look at it. And this guy's got absolutely no links to us whatsoever. He's been a referee in England for years and years, and he looked at it, and the way he seen it, and I thought it was quite good. And our... Gordon Strachan basically said exactly the same thing after it. I don't know if you heard what Strachan said about it or no, Derek, and there's a guy that, you know, certainly isn't biased towards Glasgow Rangers. He had basically said, look at where the referee is, look at where the incident happened, and look at the line of sight that the referee has. Now, where the referee was, he's seen the tackle coming in, and he's seen the ball move to the left hand side.
Yeah.
So as far as the referee's seen it, that ball moved. That was a fair tackle. He got a touch on the ball and he got it away. Therefore, it wasn't a penalty. And Gordon Strachan basically said, that's the end of the story. Yeah. That's the end of the story. He says, it's not a penalty. End of story. He says, you can look at it from every angle you want. That's what the referee saw. He says, that's what any person out there would have done if they'd have seen that ball move like that. He says, end of. He says, so we shouldn't even be having this discussion. But because, again, media, and because of their obsessed support and, you know, all these conspiracy theories going on, that's all that anybody spoke about after it. So, you know, I keep saying hindsight's a great thing, but to be fair to Strachan and to be fair to the Graham Poole, they said exactly the same thing. The ball moved to the left-hand side. That's the way the referee's seen it. He didn't give a penalty. End of. I mean, how many of these decisions happen in every game of football, Derek, out there, for amateur right up to the World Cup? It happens all the time.
Yep. It's more the point that they have never learned anything from Samaras's penalty miss. I mean, there was a lot of people coming online, a lot of people on the Super Scoreboard after it. That referee, that biased referee, the cheating, you know, he cost us 3 points today. No, he made a decision, and your view should be that he cost you a penalty. He never mm-hmm. cost you 3 points because you still have to score the bloody thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the bottom line.
I know.
And Griffiths also came out and says that he's claiming that the ref asked them, you know, did Hill actually get a touch on the ball? You know, I'm certainly no believing that for Griffiths.
No, but I don't think so at all, but again...
But even that, it depends on the context of how the referee asked it. Was it a case of, if he kept moaning about it, well, did he get mm-hmm. a touch on the ball then? No, he never, so shut the fuck...
He did.
Anyway, it was an interesting game. Certainly there was positives to take out of it, and obviously negatives, how we just, you know, faded away in the kind of middle of the game. But certainly, you know, can't argue with a draw away at Parkhead when we're playing the way we've been playing. So
yep, exactly.
We'll bring it back to Ibrox.
Yes.
Hampden the next one.
Hampden the next one. And here's hoping that Mr. Kishinya has got... a few sort of plans up his sleeve. I think we'll certainly be more, better prepared than we were, you know, a few months ago if we were going into this game as well. I don't know what your thoughts are on that game, Derek. Are you quite looking forward to it, or are you quite upbeat about it?
Well, I think now with the new, I mean, bearing in mind we've only played one game, which we'll get onto in a minute. But you know, certainly, you know, your renewed optimism.
Yes.
Certainly after their complacency as well. If I was going to choose one game to lose, I would rather it be the league game and then win the cup game, obviously. But we'll obviously see what happens.
Yes.
Next game now was Kishinya's first game in charge. It was Saturday the 18th of March, a 4-0 win at home to Hamilton in the Premiership. Before the game kicked off, there was a banner from the Union Bears basically thanking Murty and saying to Pedro, welcome to the biggest club in Scotland, the most successful club in the world. So it was a great touch there to pay tribute to Murty, mm-hmm. and he did acknowledge that as well.
Yep.
Line-up was Fotheringham, Tavernier, Hill, Wilson, Wallace, Holt, Torral, Heineman, Wycorn, Miller, Mackay. On the subs bench, we had Alnwick, Dodu, Gardner, Senderos, Hodgson, Forrester, Windass. As Dave alluded to, it was probably the best performance of the year from start to finish. We chased every ball. We were very attacking. We were direct. When we never had the ball, it was a case of, right, we'll get into positions, we'll chase the ball as well, and we just never let up all game. So if this is what we are in for, we are going to have potentially some team on our hands.
Yeah, the thing that struck me about it straight away, Derek, it was basically, you know, three passes and then, you know, a direct shot at goal, or three passes and we were making a chance. There wasn't this, you know, we'll pass the ball, pass, or we give it away, we'll do everything we can to get the ball and then keep passing. It was just constantly pass and move, get forward, make chances, which is, you know, what we've been missing all season. They were so direct, it was unbelievable. It was like watching a completely different team, in my opinion. And the difference in James Tavernier in one game is, I mean, that guy was absolutely fantastic in the game against Hamilton. The best that he has played since last season, you know, when he was really on form last season, I thought he was absolutely outstanding, and I couldn't believe it was the same player that was watching him.
No.
He was beating players. His first touch, his passing movement was tremendous. He just looked dangerous every single time he got the ball, and that's what we've been crying out for, and I think maybe that's what he's been crying out for as well, and hopefully this is going to give him a whole new lease of life, because we all know he's got the ability, but he's just been, you know, by his standards, very poor this season. I was really impressed, Derek, really, really impressed.
Yep. I mean, granted, Hamilton sitting bottom, I believe, and the They lined up very kind of defensive. They were clearly looking for a draw out of the game. I don't think they had a proper recognised striker, but they certainly did set up that way. But we've normally struggled with that kind of play, and we've been
not
even struggled to score, just even struggled to create a chance at goal.
Yep.
But we never had that problem, because we're playing differently. We were, you know, going out from the wing, we're crossing balls in, we were playing more direct, we're getting the ball wide and then cutting in. We were fantastic the game. Anyway, 26th minute, it was a great direct forward play from Tavernier, a good 1-2 with Miller. He crossed the ball on the deck for Hyman to slot it home to make it 1-0. 41st minute, great floated free kick from Tavernier on the right of the box, and it finds, I believe it was the feet of Clint Hill, who kind of more or less taps it in again for the second of the game.
Big clinical Clint.
On the 55th minute, Waghorn was clearly taken down in the box, and then he slotted home a cool penalty down the middle. And on the 74th minute, lovely link-up play with Waghorn, who had a back-heel move to play the ball into the box for Wallace to run in, and he hit the ball at an angle on the left-hand side to slot it past the keeper. So ended up 4-0, absolutely fantastic, and I can't wait till Saturday, because we're hoping for more of the same, obviously.
Exactly. No, it was, like I said, Derek, it was so direct, and they were taking risks, and by that I don't mean, they were being lucky. They were basically, they were having faith in someone being on the end of crosses, you know, so they weren't scared to fire crosses in and fire shots in, because there was like a belief that there would be somebody there to get on the end of it, and we have been missing that. It's been like, watching us this season again, it's like trying to score the perfect goal, you know. Well,
you don't score until you score.
That's right, baby.
No, even this season, you know, the halfway through last season, scoring the perfect goal, you know, constant passes, you know, but basically try to pass the ball into the net. Whereas this time, as you say, they were getting the ball, getting forward, they were firing crosses in, they were firing, you know, 1-2s at the edge of the box. They weren't scared to have shots. The corners were getting fired in as well. It was just very, very refreshing to see, and I was really, really impressed. And like I said before, I thought Tav was outstanding. The best game he's played this season by a mile.
Definitely. Leaves us in the league, played 29, won 14, drew 8, lost 7, scored 42, conceded 33, goal difference still in single figures at 9, which hopefully will change on Saturday, and we've got 50 points. 8 points behind Aberdeen, 33 behind Celtic. I think Celtic can win the league this weekend, I think.
They can win it without playing a game.
Aye.
If Aberdeen are playing, I think it's possibly Dundee on Friday.
Yeah.
And if Aberdeen don't win, then Celtic win the league. Yeah. If Celtic better Aberdeen's score, then they win the league at Tynecastle on Sunday, which they more than likely will. I mean, let's be honest.
You've looked into that too much, Dave. Come on.
No, the reason I know that is because when I was watching the Sky Sports interview, Derek, I've been watching a lot of telly, mate. Let's be honest. I've been sitting in the house the vast majority of the time watching the TV, but it was on Sky Sports as to, you know, the ins and outs of it, and basically if Aberdeen don't win on Friday, then Celtic have won the league without kicking a ball. Fair play to them, Derek. Like I said, they've been clinical, they've finished teams off, they've been very attacking, they've scored a lot of goals. You know, they've deserved it this season. I'm not going to take any and away for them. We've been very poor by our standards, and I think watching us on Saturday there shows you that the players can perform, you know, especially over the last two weeks. But that game there, it shows you that the players that we do have can perform at this level and can score goals and can dominate teams. So we just have to hope that it keeps going like that to the end of the season. And I've got a good feeling about it. The big games obviously is going to be away at Pittodrie. I don't know when that game is. It can't be that far away.
That's 9th of April, I believe.
And day before my birthday, Derek. There you go. I'm just putting that in there so you remember my present, mate. But that's going to be a huge game for us, that one. And also we've got games against Hearts and that are coming up as well. We just have to hope that Aberdeen drop a few points here or there before we play them, so that, you know, it gives us a bit, you know, an extra onus to get in there and win that match. But see, the last time that we played them at Pittodrie, Derek, Aberdeen weren't great, and we were just as good as they were. And remember, they scored that wonder goal right at the end of the match, you know, to beat us. You know, one of these ones that could have ended up anywhere, but it settled right in the top corner. So Aberdeen certainly weren't, you know, the better team that day, and we didn't particularly play that well against them, and I would still have said that we were the better team that day. So I've got high hopes, mate. It's good to have that wee bit of confidence back when we're watching it, and we're all, as you say, really looking forward to the upcoming games now, considering how well we played on Saturday. So let's keep it up.
Yep. So next games, as we kind of got into there, Saturday the 1st of April, which is this Saturday coming, home to Motherwell in the Premiership. Wednesday the 5th of April, away to Kilmarnock. That's a 19:45 kickoff, probably. I think because of the way they've done the winter break, all the games are getting crammed in. So I don't think a Wednesday night game will be on TV. Sunday the 9th of April, away to Aberdeen, as we said. That's a 12:30 kickoff, so that will be on TV. Well, maybe not, actually, given the fact that we're playing on Wednesday, so who the fuck knows what's on TV.
Exactly.
Saturday the 15th of April, at home to Partick. Hopefully just after that game we will get the next podcast out before the next game, which would be Sunday the 23rd of April at Hampden against Celtic in the Scottish Cup semi-final, which is a 12 o'clock kickoff, and yes, that will be on TV.
Yes, I would like to think so. No, it will be good that I think me and you were planning on going out for a few beers on the 21st, Derek. We could maybe do a pished pod that night, which is two days before. But no, I'm looking forward to these games now, Derek. Just like you, I'm really looking forward to watching how we play on Saturday, and going by what Andy Halliday was saying on Sky as well. There's been a lot of training crammed in, their days off have all been changed and things like that, but he certainly says that everybody's really fighting for the jersey now, they're all fighting for their futures, and it's great, it's good to see.
Just on that, I mean, you said that, you know, their days off had been moved about, apparently, just obviously because the international break there, there was 13-odd days between the last game and the next this game, and he says they're only going to have a couple of games off, they're in training every just about every single day. Fantastic to see.
Superb, definitely, definitely.
Right, we'll finish up that section there, and we will now go into the Blue Room. A few bits and pieces to
cover.
We have released the 6 month interim unaudited accounts, which show a profit of £300,000. Some of the one or two websites were shown that were actually posted a loss, which was utter bullshit, but I think they were just reading into things what they wanted there. But certainly it's a vast improvement. We were shown a loss of £500,000 at the same time last year. So obviously that's nearly £800,000 we've made back. That's obviously partly due to you know, higher attendances, season tickets, and related advertising for that as well. And apparently that where there will be funding available should we need it, we don't need any further funding to sustain us to the end of the year,
the end of the season,
which is fantastic as well. So he has kind of, King has hinted that the kind of retail deal with Mike Ashley will be getting sorted out soon.
I don't know the ins and outs, Derek, or how it's going to be sorted out. Or
the way I take it is a case of, you know, they may be close to actually working with them and agreeing a mutual deal with them. That's the way I read into what he said. I might be wrong, obviously, but you know, I think it's too far gone now.
I'm very surprised that he came away with that. I don't know. As I say, obviously, we don't know the ins and outs. We don't know what's been said. He certainly sounded quite confident that there's something would be. He kind of spoke as if it wasn't a big deal, Derek. I don't know if you got that vibe off him as well. It was as if, oh, no, it's not a big deal. It'll get sorted. And I think it's absolutely massive for us. And the fans are crying out for something to get sorted. But it was kind of, I'll not say sort of brushed aside or anything by him, but there didn't seem to be any urgency with him, you know, talking about it. It was basically, I'm confident that we'll get sorted soon, and, you know, and that was it. He didn't really go into it. And
the thing about
I'm very sceptical about it, still very sceptical about it.
I mean, as much as I would buy the Rangers merchandise, I certainly wouldn't be going into Sports Direct to buy anything else like I'd done before all this kicked off. So I would do it to benefit our club. I wouldn't do it to benefit for Ashley or buy anything else. Maybe this has all came about because they were just previous to him making that statement. They were back in court again, due to Mike Ashley bringing a wrongful termination suit against Rangers due to obviously us ripping up the merchandise deal. So maybe this is something that's came from that. I don't know. As we've said all along, we're not asking for, you know, 100% of the deal. We want a fair chunk that we're due for them distributing the merchandise. We're not saying that they shouldn't get money for it, we're just wanting our fair share, which obviously it wasn't. Well, that's as well documented now.
Yes, no, definitely, and I think the vast majority of supporters are desperate to buy the strips. I mean, I know how many times have we spoken about this? I mean, I would certainly go out and buy my boy a strip, and it's the same. I mean, there's loads of other people are in the same boat. I mean, there's a lot of things being talked about as well, Derek, because I believe the sponsorship deal with 32 Red is coming to coming to an end as well. Yeah. Is that right?
That will be right, so aye.
Aye, so I don't know what's, you know, if that's got anything to do with it as well.
Moving on, next thing about Dave King is that the financial watchdog has ruled that King has acted in concert with the Three Bears regarding the takeover. That really came from a complaint that the Fat Slug Summers lodged around the time of the EGM, basically to disrupt King. It means that they see King as really the one in control of all the shares, effectively, and he was the main instigator of it. Again, I don't know 100% about, you know, corporate governance or anything like that, but apparently they've said that he has to offer every shareholder that he doesn't own shares of 20 pence per share, which would equate to about £20 million in total. £14 million in total. He only has to make the offer. They don't need to accept, and it's highly likely that they won't. It means that Mike Ashley, the Easdales, Margarita Holdings, Club 1872, minor shareholders all need to accept it. So they need virtually everybody to accept it, otherwise it doesn't go through. So it doesn't even make sense, that, because it's unlikely to even happen. Also, it was strange that the fact that the shares are apparently currently trading at 27 pence, so why are people going to sell for less than what they're actually financially worth just now?
I think there was a few people, I mean, Derek, I don't know the ins and outs, you're certainly a lot more end up in these things and what I am, there was people saying that, you know, people that had bought the shares for maybe a penny or something like that would maybe be tempted to sell, you know, if they could. But as you say, it doesn't make any sense, because everybody would have to agree it, and if the shares are up at 27 pence, then it's certainly, you know, it's just the whole thing just reeks to me, to be honest with you. And, you know, is it just a way these guys that were in before, like Summers, or these spongers, are basically trying to get some money back? I don't know how it all works.
Nearly do, to be honest. I mean, the best case scenario would be that he does offer the 20 pence per share and every single person agrees. Then I know that's not what they're wanting, in terms of they said that they didn't want one single person having the sole control of the club. But it would mean, obviously, that Easdale's, you know, Ashley, Margarita, are all out the equation then. So
yeah,
it could work out well, it could work maybe not, but again, it's very unlikely that they're going to accept that.
Yeah.
So it's a wait and see. On the back of that, Dave King, a company that Dave King owns in South Africa, has been fined £68,000 for the takeover, the way it was done. It was another hostile takeover, apparently, and it was to do with the way the company was structured. And I think it's more or less the same sort of thing that's happened with the Rangers thing. So I don't know what the hell's happening there. Obviously, it's got a lot of people's backs up that, oh, you know, it's King, he's bloody...
Yeah, involved, exactly. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, I know. Yep. Uh-huh.
On that note, King, in one of his statements he kind of did made, he dismissed the issue about him being in South Africa and basically being a more or less an absentee chairman. I think some fans need to really look up the role of a chairman for any company, because the role of a chairman is not to be there 24/7 and do every single deal. The role of the chairman is to make statements to the public and to chair board meetings, which is exactly what he's done. So
I think, Derek, if you go back years and years ago, we have been used to guys like David Murray basically being there all the time. Anything, there was anything happening, you know, with Rangers, he was there. And I think, as you say, there are very few and far between that are still like that, you know, chairman that are there all the time, you know, that have their office in the stadium or whatever, and they're there every day, you know, because usually a chairman has got so many other business interests, you know, all over the world, especially for a big club, that it's impossible for them to be there all the time. You know, there's a lot of things get said about King. I don't know, you know, half of it is stuff that people are just trying to cause problems. The way I see it is that King stepped in for us at another time of need, as, you know, that we were getting taken over by, you know, people that didn't have the club's best interests at heart, and he basically stepped in. That's the way I see it, and I do firmly believe that he does have the club at heart, and he wants the best for the club. We keep getting told about, you know, he says it was putting £30 million and, you know, a lot of that was taken out of context and stuff like that. But I do genuinely believe that he does have the club at heart. whether or not he's going about it, you know, the way that we would all like him to, or, you know, money's got spent the way that we would all like it to, but we're not the chairmen, we're not running the club. I think that a lot of people just think that that money was just going straight into buying players and stuff like that, but there's a hell of a lot more to it than that, you know.
I think some of the people are believing the newspapers as well, because they keep publishing Dave King is the owner of Rangers. Dave King is not the owner, he's a 14% shareholding of Rangers. Mm-hmm. And obviously this now ruling says he's, you know, he's maybe upwards of that, obviously, and yeah, he would become the owner if he decides to put this offer in. But what is the now and what they've published is completely factually wrong. He is not the owner of Rangers, which I think some fans are getting on the back of. And you're 100% correct in saying that, you know, we're too used to David Murray being, you know, there. He was the owner. That's the difference. He was at least a 51% shareholder of Rangers. He was the owner. He made the decisions. He was the chairman, you know, and then he stepped down, obviously. So we're too used to that. So that's one thing we'll need to kind of look at in the near future, to see what actually happens with his offer, if he puts it in or not. I don't think it's very clear what actually happens if he refuses to put the offer in, but we'll obviously find out in due course if that's the case. And in terms of, you know, what you said about he's got the best interest of the club at heart, of course he has. He came out and also said that he's only really had 10 hours of fun since being back at Ibrox. He didn't really want the role, but he felt he had to step up to, mm-hmm. because nobody else would, and that the club was going to get, you know, swept up by Mike Ashley and dodgy deals like that. Alleged dodgy deals, I'll say that.
alleged, yeah. I mean, there was, if you think of the state that the club was in before he did step in, Derek, we were spiralling out of control again, and basically Mike Ashley was just going to be in complete control of us, and we were going to get nothing out of us, and nothing out of it. And we were just going to be kept alive and no more. That's the way I see it. And we would have become, God only knows what, you know, type of feeder club that we would have been come for. Newcastle, you know, it would have been a money-making exercise for him and for, you know, for another club. And, you know, that would have been us. So we would just have to be thankful that there were people that were, you know, that did step in when they did. It's still not over by a long shot, just with, you know, things like the retail deal, which could be huge for us, but we just have to hope that it certainly looks as if we're moving in the right direction with the amount of people that we're employing, you know, for on the park as well as off the park as well.
Yeah, I mean, I nearly got into a Twitter argument. Well, I did kind of a wee bit of a Twitter argument. I don't know if anybody's seen it, but you know, a guy put on, you know, that Rangers fans wanted a Rangers man at the helm and not an absentee chairman. And I said, well, what does that mean? You're saying he's not, because he's not here, that he's not a Rangers fan, or vice versa? And he more or less, from what I've taken, I was asking him to clarify it, and he got all argumentative with me. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, what do you actually want? Are you trying to accuse him of not being a Rangers fan because he's not in the country often enough? Or
what is the other option, Derek?
I don't. He's already said, you know, in his latest run of statements that he doesn't want to come back into Scotland. It'll be end of his marriage for a start, but he's got other commitments. And again, that's not what the chairman's role does.
When I see these people constantly going on and constantly having a go at King and constantly questioning him, you know, fair enough. But what other option is there? Derek,
it's not even
a better option for us just now, that there isn't one. He is the best option that we've got, someone that has got the club, you know, at heart. And I can't see where people are. Do they think that there are multi-millionaires out there that are fanatical Rangers supporters? Of course there isn't. There's you know, very few and far between. And he's definitely the best option that we've got, or we would be back in the hands of the likes of Mike Ashley.
I think people are forgetting, though, that that's not his role. His role is not the person who does the day-to-day running. We have a managing director in the name of Stuart Robinson who does mm-hmm. that, and he has been doing that because he's been very visible, and any time anything like this, any major thing happens, he's the one that's dealing with it. So people are getting very confused about what the actual role of the chairman is, and I think they need to take a step back, tell the papers to fuck off, don't even read them, and then figure out what the hell that they actually want out of the club, or want out of to support the club, because some of them are going off at a tangent, and they're blaming King for this, that and the other, when it's not actually him that does it. Anyway, in relation to that as well, they have announced a reworking of the board structure within Rangers. It's all to do with the holding company, the operating company. It was like the footballing board, the non-footballing board, executive directors, non-executive directors. And the board structure was put in place initially to accommodate Sandy Easdale, because he couldn't sit on the holding company board because of his previous convictions. Basically, it's a reworking, so because I think some of the directors had dual role in both of the holding and the operating company, which wasn't very good. There was no impartiality between either or there, and they do operate as a separate kind of entity, from what I believe. And so it's just a general restructuring, nothing to worry about by the look of it, from what I can see. The whole bloggers of the Celtic variety, they were on Twitter completely ignoring the facts, and all they had seen was official documents saying that the three directors were resigning from one board, not to do with the fact that they've rehired in another part of the board. They've people got people to replace them, and they never read the statement. So
of course they wouldn't, Derek. Come on now.
It was actually comical to see. It really was.
Yeah.
The last bit of actual Rangers news here was the big tax case, obviously, was held over the 2 days in between the last two this pod and the next last one there. Can't really say much because apparently the verdict's going to be in about 5 to 6 weeks, so probably about another 4 weeks to go. So, again, it makes no difference to the Rangers company as it is, but it'll certainly, you know, give a lot of scope to see what kind of happened.
Like I said in the last pod, Derek, regardless what happens, it's going to be, you know, there's going to be big ramifications, you know, whatever happens, whether this is a case for them going after clubs or going after individuals. So it's going to be huge, I think, regardless what happens.
Next thing here, I want to move on to Club 1872.
No, again.
Again, unfortunately. I think we've got to kind of cover this here. Let's be honest, me and you both have wanted it to work. As much as I pulled my money out of it and I stopped doing my membership of Rangers First when I knew the merger was going to happen, I wanted to see what was going to happen, and I've documented that before, both on Twitter and both on this. But it's fair to say now that the whole entire thing is an absolute shambles for me. I don't know how much you've kind of taken into it. Basically, what's happened lately is, obviously, people probably know about this by now, but three directors resigned at once. One of them came out and wrote a statement on a blog saying it was really down to the fact that they could no longer work or put up with one of the other directors, who was becoming troublesome by the look of it. And he applied to be the... obviously, Rangers have got a position opened up for the supporters liaison officer. A couple of board members had applied for that role at Rangers, and they declared it to the Club 1872 board. One of them hadn't declared it to the board, and they weren't the troublesome one, and the other directors thought they've had enough of this and they've resigned. There's claims that it's been Craig Houston that's the one who's been the troublesome one and not declared that they actually went for the job. I don't know how true that is. People obviously make assumptions on that. I'm going to give Craig the benefit of the doubt because I don't know him. We're not privy to the conversations or anything he's had, so I can't really make any claims on that. But really, it's on its knees now, Club 1872. There have been a lot of cancellations. I mean, Ricky Neal, who works, he's worked tirelessly, I think, with Rangers First initially, and he's been a member of Club 1872. I've just seen a thing on Twitter just now saying that he's just quit his membership for 1872 as well. Me and you have both championed in it to an extent. We wanted it to work, and I certainly would have put money back into it had it worked, but I think it's went the way a lot of people thought it's going to do. You know, right from the off, it's been a shambles from day one. There was delayed boards being put in place. I think that was the best part of 6 months, if not longer. It was then delayed even further, them actually getting to do the role they were put on the board for. It was a shambles of the fact that they'd taken over the Rangers Supporters Trust Twitter, and there was people still blocked on that. Should there be a new entity altogether? A complete lack of communication. There's been a bunch of accusations of self-serving directors, which this may be the case. Lack of clarity on independence from the RFC board. I mean, Stuart Robinson has said that he wants them, before this obviously kicked off, he wanted, you know, weekly and monthly meetings with them. I think he should stay well clear of it until it's sorted out. There should be some sort of, you know, either fold it now and go back to the Rangers first, or call an EGM and basically scrap the existing board and have a new set of elections. Bearing in mind, the elections that were there to put the board in place, there were only just about 1,000 people voted out of supposedly, you know, well, nobody knows how many members there are now, certainly a lot less over the last couple of weeks. They are having a members only meeting, which is one of the big issue. It should be an open forum for me, and they're holding the meeting on Thursday the 6th of April in the Ibrox suite at 6:30 p.m. That's caused a lot of issues as well, because not a lot of people can actually attend. People have got work, people are not based in Glasgow, people are based all over the world for Rangers, Club 1872, which was one of the remits of it to get a big membership going. They haven't even structured anything like, well, we'll transmit the meeting over Periscope so you can join in with that. It's an absolute shambles, and something needs to change, and I don't think it will. I think it's done now. It really is. It's pissed me off, because it was a great opportunity to get, you know, a lot of fans together under one banner going for the same thing, and ever since the inception of it, the mergers, it's just been an absolute shambles, as I've outlined there.
That is very disappointing to hear all that, Derek, because we were hopeful that, you know, when all the fans groups all got together, it was going to be, you know, something that everyone could become involved in. And, you know, if everything's falling apart now, and there's a lot of people have fallen out, and as you say, if it looks as if it's going to, you know, collapse altogether, it's a real shame that it didn't work out, especially if it has been for, you know, maybe just a few and individuals that have caused all this. You really, you know, have to think as to what the motives are. You would think that everyone would be wanting the same thing, but quite obviously they don't.
I mean, what I don't understand is, and not that I'm calling the three who resigned integrity into question here, but really, is that the main reason why that they decided all to en masse, you know, quit the board and leave the thing in limbo? I would find it very, very hard to believe that, to be honest. It's just that. It might be, for all we know, it might be a culmination of all that I've kind of highlighted there, and this was the final straw. I don't know, but would it not have been more of an easier thing to do where they force this person off the board if they're going to be an arsehole about it, you know, rather than three people quit the board? I don't know how that easy it is to do, but certainly from a standpoint of a supporters group, and it doesn't make much sense that three people have had to quit because of one.
Yeah, that's a strange one. I wonder, as you say, there's not going to be any sort of coverage for people that aren't members. I'd still like to think that a lot of the members out there will let everyone know, you know, on social media, as exactly what happens at this meeting on the 6th of April.
Well, there's the thing, in respect to their effective, and I'm going to call it a paywall, because that's exactly what it is. You need to pay to see information when it comes to Club 1872. Is within minutes of them issuing a statement which is behind that paywall, it's already up and follow, you know, chapter and verse. Somebody's copied and pasted it in. So what's the point of having it hidden like that and have this cloak and daggers thing if it's just somebody's going to post it up there, you know?
Aye, it's true. As I say, it'll be interesting to find out what happens at this meeting on the 6th. I just have to wait and see, Derek. But as you say, it's very disappointing, because we did all want it to work. You know, in a perfect world, we would have wanted it all to work. It's something that we all could have contributed to as supporters, but it's just a pity that they can't all just sort of work together on it. It's very, very strange how it's all panned out like this. But the cracks have been appearing over the last few months. That you've asked a lot of questions. You've had quite a lot of hostility with regards to it as well, which has been
strange also, you know, just normal questions that you were asking, but we'll just have to wait and see what happens now, Derek.
Yep. So on that note, we will leave it there and we will go to the classic match.
Classic match. Cue Huey Lewis and the news.
I'm not doing it again, this one.
Oh, Derek, that's just being lazy.
Manchester, brace yourself. Rangers are coming!
You've got a good classic match for us this week.
Yeah, I've got a quality match, Derek. All the way back in 1999, is at the start of the season now. Derek, I'll set the tone for you. I'll set the tone for you. Dick Advocaat was in charge of Rangers. We had that. One of my favourite ever kits was the NTL Nike strip that we had that was basically just blue and white. Remember that one?
Yep.
Beautiful kit. We had just had one of the best results, European results in years, where we had beaten the Italian champions Parma 2-0 at Ibrox, a game that we've covered on the classic match before. So things were, you know, we were on a high. We had a number of world-class players in our team. So I have chosen a league game, the 15th of August 1999, just a few days after the Parma game at Ibrox, when we took on Motherwell. The lineup for that day for Rangers, I mean, here's some of the players, Derek. We had Antti Niemi in goals.
I'm phoning, you know, about Craig Brown's selection for the Scotland squad.
Yep.
He must know that Hearts have got a good team. We get Colin Cameron in the squad, Stephen Presley.
Yep.
I just don't know why for at least three seasons he's been ignoring Antti Niemi.
Antti Niemi?
Aye, I don't know why he doesn't get a game.
For Scotland?
Aye.
He's from Finland.
He's what?
He's Finnish, isn't he?
He's not finished. He's only 28.
No, not finished. He's from Finland.
What do you mean?
That's where his nationality is Finnish. He's from Finland.
He's not Scottish?
No.
Oh, I thought he was Scottish.
We had a back four of Craig Moore, Sergio Perini, Lorenzo Amoruso and Tony Vidmar. In midfield, Barry Ferguson, Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, Claudio Reyna and Neil McCann, and up front Michael Walls and Rod Wallace. Absolute class team. And this, if I look at the Motherwell team, some players that you'll remember in it, but back then it was actually Billy Davis that was the Motherwell manager, Derek, a young Billy Davis. But they had the goalie in goals at that point, Andy Gorham, who was sporting a very strange haircut. I don't know if you've seen it or no, Derek. It was a sort of half mullet thing that he had. He didn't quite have the height in his hair, but he had the sort of long curls at the back. I don't know what Andy was thinking about then. But they had John Spencer and Lee McCulloch up front. A very young Lee McCulloch was playing a striker that day. They also had Pat Nevin on the bench. So some well-known players in there. On the bench for Rangers that day, we had Brown, Fitzgerald, George Alberts, Darius Adamczyk and Jonathan Johansson. Now, this game for me, Derek, I was at this game, I can remember it, and on this sort of game, Michael Molls, this was the game where he really, you know, he really set the heather alight. We had been wondering how good a player he was. He had quite a big reputation coming. We had seen flashes before, but after this game, we just, everyone came away from the stadium after this game absolutely raving about Michael Molls. He was absolutely sensational. So we started off the game on the front foot straight away. Lorenzo Amoruso had one of his trademark mazy runs forward past the halfway line. He then passed the ball to Michael Molls, who played a through ball to Neil McCann. He was through, one and one with the goalie, had a shot straight at Andy Gorham, but it was a ferocious shot he had. Great save, but Andy Gorham, as I say, sporting that strange sort of mullet haircut he has at the time. Not long after that, Michael Molls in halfway line, he was actually tracking back. Molls picked the ball up played the ball through to Claudio Reyna, who ran through and chipped the ball into Rod Wallace. It looked as if he was actually going to have the shot, Reyna, but he feigned the shot. A chip into Wallace. That was the first sort of main chance. Wallace, header, just past the post. Everybody thought he'd scored just past. And then, not long after that again, it was sort of 1-2s all the way. Press and play by Rangers was sensational, as you would expect with some of the players that were on show at that point. So 1-2s all the way, Reyna to Wallace and then to McCann. Ball played through, McCann sort of slid in to try and get a shot. It was like a stretch shot. It was the powerful, but it was certainly heading for the bottom corner. Andy Gorham, fantastic save, kept it out. You know, and again, before the match, it was, oh, you've got your ex-goalkeeper in, you know, that, he's all get, you know, run up a cricket score, he'll be standing in your way. But some of the saves that Gorham pulled off in this game were fantastic, and he was keeping Motherwell in the match at that point, Gorham. So that was his second, you know, outstanding save of that game. And then we got the sort of first sort of glimmer in Moll's magic. On the edge of the box, he sort of danced past three players, twisting and turning, turned his back, finds Barry Ferguson on the halfway line. He couldn't get shot away, Derek. The ball was sort of trapped under his feet, but his feet were so fast that he was able to still keep the ball with three players round about him. He couldn't get shot away, managed to keep the ball, played the ball back to Barry Ferguson on the halfway line. Ferguson then found McCann, who put a great ball out to Claudio Reyna on the right wing, and then the cross came in, and all of this had been started by Moles, but the cross came in and he tried the most outrageous overhead kick, which just went past the post. You know, sensational stuff. If that goal had went in, it would have been goal of the season, but he was very unlucky. And then finally we got the first goal on the 41st minute.
Now, is this a chance for Rangers to try and open up this Motherwell defence? They're caught out. McCann, if he plays it early, Wallace is there, tries to pick out Rod Wallace. Moles! What a goal! That was a beautiful goal. Well won by Rangers. Michael Moles.
Lorenzo Amoruso wins the ball just inside his own half. He plays the ball to Claudio Reyna, who played it on to Neil McCann on the left, and McCann with the most fantastic high cross from the left, swinging right in just past the penalty spot, and Michael Moles just waited and just fired in a volley with his right foot. Absolute peach of a goal to make it 1-0. Sensational goal for Rangers to go 1-0 up. And then straight after that, Giovanni van Bronckhorst, just after the retake of the match, Motherwell had kicked off, we won the ball. Van Bronckhorst with a chip ball down the wing to Tony Vidmar. Vidmar kept his head down, a low cross to Michael Moles. Again, the ball sort of trapped under his feet, but he dragged it one way, dragged it another, and then he managed to turn it, have a shot, and it was deflected wide, absolutely all over them. And then, just before half-time, 45 minutes.
An impressive performance by the Rangers winger. Oh, lovely jink by McCann. Now, can anybody finish this move off? There's the shot, there's the answer. Michael Moles, his second link up with Neil McCann, his second goal, and Rangers in easy street, 2-0 ahead on the half time.
Neil McCann gets the ball, absolutely skins the Motherwell defender on the right hand side, puts in a low cross to the penalty spot. There's Michael Moles to fire it in to make it 2-0. Great, got, you know, absolutely all over them. Moles outstanding. But we went in there 2-0 at half time. Into the second half, all Rangers again. Van Bronckhorst chip pass to McCann on the left, beats his man again. Neil McCann was outstanding this match also. Beats his man, gets to the byline. There's a high cross. Michael Moles headed it back across the face of the goal towards Wallace on the penalty spot, who had a shot and just managed to get a last-ditch tackle. The ball then fell to Van Bronckhorst, who hit a shot which went past the post, all over them. And then on the 69th minute, we got the third goal.
Niemi has had very little to do in the second half of this game. Reyna, lovely ball through to Moles. This is the hat-trick. There it is.
Michael Moles, a lovely pass through, took his time. Andy Gorham standing up as long as he possibly could. Arena just picking the pass, beautifully splitting the Motherwell defence. Moles guiding the ball through Andy Gorham's legs. And from this angle, you see the skill and the finishing of Michael Moles. It's Rangers 3, Motherwell 0.
Barry Ferguson finds Claudio Arena on the halfway line, and he just plays the first time curved, perfectly weighted pass, Derek, just a long, perfectly weighted pass, curved, which goes right round the defender, on Moles, timed his run perfectly, runs through, fires it low underneath Andy Gorham to make it 3-0. Absolutely outstanding pass by Rayner, and a great finish, cool as you like, by Moles. That gave him his hat-trick, absolutely outstanding. But it didn't finish there. Again, we were going all out. Claudio Reyna to Perini, and then Perini to Moles. Moles lays the ball off to Wallace, who had a great chance to score. It wasn't Wallace's game with the chances that he had. He missed the ball. He completely missed the ball, but it sort of missed him, but fell straight to Neil McCann, who was at the back post. And McCann hit a sort of half-hearted shot, which was gone right in the top corner. And Andy Gorham just pulls off one of, you know, the best saves you'll see, to be honest with you. One-handed, manages to tip the ball onto the bar and out. The ball comes back to Michael Moles, sidesteps his defender and over the bar. But this save for Andy Gorham, you know, absolutely outstanding, incredible. Then on the 80th minute, we managed to get a fourth goal as well.
Clear to the edge of the box again. Moles there. Is it the fourth? Oh, that's magnificent! Michael Moles. It's a smile of disbelief. Everything that has fallen to this man's feet has ended up in the back of the net. You just suspected a Rangers player would be there. The control, the drive, no great power, just superb direction. And Rangers, 4-0 up. Four goals for Michael Moles, and this finish, superb.
George Alberts was now on the field. He had a long-range shot which got deflected for a corner. From that resultant corner, Van Bronckhorst fired the ball in. It was headed out by the Motherwell defenders straight to the edge of the box. And who else was there? Michael Moles, Derek, with the most incredible half volley that you'll see. Controlled and just hit this half volley, and it just dipped right into the bottom left hand corner. Andy Gorham, he couldn't have done anything about it. Fantastic goal to make it 4-0. Four goals for Michael Moles. After that, we did have the ball in the net. Rod Wallace scored. It was given offside. Like I said, it wasn't Wallace's game at all with the chances that he had. And then right on the 90th minute, and the only reason I'm mentioning this just was because who it was, Motherwell got their consolation goal. It was Pat Nevin who put a low cross in, and there was a very young Lee McCulloch to basically just get his toe in front of Craig Moore to put the ball home to get Motherwell's consolation. But apart from that, Derek, it was all about Michael Moles. Absolute sheer class, and I can still remember everybody raving about, you know, this guy is world class, this guy is going to be phenomenal for us. And he was a phenomenal player, just unlucky with injuries. But at that point, that was when Moles was, you know, really, you know, at his prime for us. Absolutely sensational. And, you know, three of the goals that he scored were just absolutely unbelievable. So if you get the chance to go and watch it, you really should. Just to even see, you know, the volley that he has for his fourth goal. Absolutely fantastic stuff. And you watched it as well, Derek, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, when you told me we were going to do that game, I mean, my memory is shocking when it comes to looking back at games, unless it was like a big, big, massive game. Yep. But I knew that game instantly because of that last goal he scored, that volley.
Oh.
It was just a peach, and what a talent that guy could have been for us. Obviously, I mean, we did see some of him, but, you know, he was just... He was one of these people, expect the unexpected, because there was a point in that game where the ball came in and across... and it kind of fell to him, and he could have just lamped the ball, and he probably would have been scored for it, mind you. He could have lamped the ball into the bottom corner, but it was crowded, so he decides to control it, take all the speed out of it, one touch, and then bang, puts on his other foot and hits a shot. It went over the bar, but it was just expected, unexpected, a natural gifted player, and just one of these things that it's an innocuous challenge. He didn't need to go for the ball that way, and Oliver Kahn, you know, wrecked the guy's career.
It was, I wouldn't say he wrecked his career. He came back, Derek, and he still managed to score a lot of goals. I don't think that he was as good as he could have been because of that challenge, but he still was absolutely outstanding for us. And the thing that I loved about him the most is that if the ball came to him at the edge of the box, he would have his back to goal. He could turn so quickly and have a shot. I'd never seen anybody could do that before. You know, he had the way that he could swivel his hips so quickly and he get a powerful shot, and, you know, his back to goal was, like, absolutely sensational. He's a great player, and his feet, you know, the way that a ball could get trapped, you know, in his feet, he could have three players round about him and he could skin all of them within, you know, 2 feet. He could get them away, get a shot, or get the ball back. It was just, it was fantastic. It was great at holding the ball up, and, you know, just for that game there, just for scoring goals as well. And if he was actually quite unselfish during the game, he could have probably got about 6 goals that game if he wanted to. But there was a few times he tried to play in Wallace and McCann as well, where he could have went for it himself. So, yeah, absolute sheer class of a player he really was. And as you say, just it's a pity that we didn't get to see him at his full potential because of his injury, but still absolutely outstanding for us. He really was, and brilliant. And Neil McCann as well in that game was just tremendous. Some of the balls that he put in, McCann was great at getting to the byline and putting crosses and stuff like that. And so, like I said before, if you get the chance, if you are sort of younger, you know, if you're in your sort of early 20s or whatever and you didn't really get a chance to see a lot of the likes of Michael Moles and stuff, go and watch that game, 15th of August 1999, it's on YouTube, absolutely sensational stuff.
Brilliant. So hopefully again we will have another classic match the next
time. Yeah.
Right, now we will go into the news.
From ITN, the ITV News at 10 with Trevor McDonald.
Right, so Dave, I believe you've actually excelled this week. You've actually got some news for a change.
It shows you how bored I am, Derek. No, the only bit of news is that the one thing that everyone's been talking about, that you spoke about it earlier on as well, is the fact that Pedro Caixinha wants to have a local coach in there as his assistant. I believe he did this at his last two clubs when he was in Mexico and when he was in Qatar. He had a local coach in there. Don't know if they were ex-players or not, but there's certainly been quite a few people who have been interviewed by him. And as Stuart Robinson said on Sky Sports, these have been interviews which Pedro Caixinha has done on his own. There's not been anybody else involved in this. Some of the players who I believe have been spoken to are Barry Ferguson, Peter Lovenkranz, Alec Ray, Nacho Novo, and John Brown. Have you heard anyone else, Derek?
I don't think Nacho Novo has been.
He's not been, no.
No, because he was in the paper, no happy that he hadn't been given an interview. So,
All right, okay. He is the one that you would say, you know, apart from playing for us, and of course he's a big hero to all us, it's not really, I don't think he's got much coaching experience either, certainly with Barry Ferguson. You know, he was the captain for quite a few years for us. You know, he was, a fantastic player for us. He, he was a product of our youth system, and recently was the first team coach at Clyde. Now, he started off very well at Clyde. He had them playing some good stuff, and then, you know, things sort of went pear-shaped, as, you know, it does for a lot of people. And he's no longer the manager of Clyde. The one thing that would worry me about Barry Ferguson is his links to the media. He does a lot of stuff for newspapers and stuff like that. I you know, I'm not going to question the guy at all. His passion for Rangers would be, you know, so something we'd be looking for. That would be my only thing that I would worry about. Going into Peter Lovenkranz as well, that was a surprise for me. Certainly comes across really well, Derek, when you listen to him on Rangers TV and stuff like that, but I don't think he's got any coaching experience either, so I don't know if that is. Alec Ray, certainly, he does a lot. You hear him a lot on the radio and stuff. He was the coach of Dundee and St Mirren, but he'd done quite well when he was the coach of Dundee the first time he was there. St Mirren job, I think that kind of went a bit pear-shaped as well, but it's been a difficult position for all the coaches that they've had in there recently. John Brown, as I say, we know about John Brown. You know, he was a reserve team coach for years at Rangers. Rangers are under-18 coach also. He's had stints at Clyde and Dundee as coaching as well. Again, very, very passionate. The one player that I sort of put a wee tweet out about who I was kind of hoping would be in there, but I don't think he has been. He's been Neil McCann.
Yeah.
I think McCann would be the perfect fit for it, Derek. I really do. I think, you know, the way the guy speaks, you know, on the TV, I think he's extremely knowledgeable on the game. And I know he has had a few sort of coaching stints, you know, assistant coaches here and there for a couple of clubs as well. But I think McCann would be a perfect fit for it. But I don't know what you're thinking, if any of those names are guys that you would prefer to be in there or not. I don't know what the full role is going to be, if they are going to have a very hands-on approach, or they're basically, you know, going to be there as an advisor, or you know, I'm not quite sure what it is that he's looking for.
Yeah, that's the kind of big thing. If you're wanting somebody to just tell them about the history of the club and keep like that, then you want somebody like Ferguson. If you want somebody to coach them and all that kind of thing, and they're going to be hands-on, then, you know, Ferguson would be a good shout, I think. But again, Neil McCann, you know, what experience has Lovenkranz or Johansson got? I know Johansson's he's number two in Finland, I think, now, if I'm right.
Is Johansson another one that's been mentioned?
Johansson's another one that's been mentioned. Mm-hmm. Alex Ray, as you said, certainly a good shout. So depends really what he's looking for. I think fans are going to be unhappy either way, because that's what Rangers fans are like. We're unhappy either way. You can never just say, oh, right, let's get on with it. You know, it's... Mm-hmm. But we'll need to wait and see, I think.
Yeah, exactly. The only other bit of news I had was in the young boy, Billy Gilmore.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of speculation. I don't know what's true and what's not true, Derek. First of all, it was a couple of nights ago that I saw that Chelsea had apparently, were putting a bid in there, about £500,000 to try and secure his services. Now, the boy is only 15 years old. I've seen other things that the bid was going to be upwards of £650,000 and stuff like that. I think it's a big risk, but obviously for a club like Chelsea, that's, you know, pocket money to them. That's, you know, they don't have to worry about it. If this guy is as good as, you know, the people are saying, obviously I would like us to try whatever we could to keep a hold of him. Derek, I know he's been training with the first team, and there's been a lot of talk also that Pedro Caixinha has been talking to him also, trying to persuade him to say, so they obviously think very highly of the guy, but I don't know much about him at all. I know he's a striker, he's been scoring a lot of goals, but there's obviously something special there if he's, you know, getting this much interest at such a young age.
Yeah, I mean, as you, like you, I don't know much about him, but the papers are all talking about him. He's apparently very, very highly rated and must be interesting if, you know, Chelsea, and I think the rumours were Arsenal potentially as well, but, you know, you've got to give the guy time. I mean, he's only 15, you know, and the old adage about if he's good enough, he's old enough, doesn't quite ring true these days because of, you know, just the way football is. So you don't want to destroy his career. At the same time, he's got to do what's best for him, and if he does decide to go down south, then, you know, we'll wish him all the luck in the world. At the same time, though, there are so many players from Scotland especially that have went to England, and they've just no made it. I mean, I think the biggest one of recent times was Islam Frouz, you know, meant to be this absolute wonder kid, and, you know, he's gone nowhere.
Another
more recently for our side was Danny Wilson.
That's right, yeah.
He was fantastic for us the first stint, and he went down south to Liverpool. Never really got a game, I think a handful of first-team games. He done nothing after that. He went back to Hearts. I think the first season was a bit iffy, and then he became the captain, Hearts. Then he was brilliant, and he's came back to us, and he's been pretty...
Hot and cold.
Aye.
I think's the best thing. I've still got hopes for Wilson Derek. I still rate him very highly, and I know a lot of people don't. I would still have him in there in front of Rob Kiernan, who I'm not a great fan of. But I still have high hopes for Wilson. I remember him playing alongside the likes of Davy Weir when he was there the first time, and I thought he was very composed. I think it just all depends on what role he's given, and I think he was really, really good in the Old Firm game. It changed the sort of way that he was playing. That all goes down to, again, Graham Murray. But I've still got high hopes for Wilson. And I really do. And, let's not forget, he was a product of our youth team as well, coming through. And for a guy like him, the experience that he's got, still being relatively young, he should be a standout in our team, week in, week out. But again, you don't know if that comes down to the previous management, the way they had their defence playing, because there was nobody in that defence that was playing well, Derek, and there was nobody, so hopefully that changes and he can get back to being, our main defender, because we need somebody in there, we need a rock in defence, and it was looking as if we were going to have to get rid of the whole defence altogether and start from scratch, but maybe the new manager can change all that, you don't know.
Yeah. Next bit of news, just obviously because of all the changes that's going on, the goalkeeping coach Jim Stewart has left his post. He was asked about it, Kashina was asked about it, and really says it wasn't a case of he wanted to get rid of him, it was a case of, well, I'm bringing my own people in, and so good luck to him and whatever he does. I don't see it being a bad thing at all. He was apparently highly rated, but he has been here since Walter Smith came back, so good luck to him. Another Kel Surprise moment here, like we kind of brought you. The last pod, we said obviously that Frank McPartland joined Notts Forest as director of football. Well, surprise, surprise.
Joined
as manager number two. They're apparently still going after us for compensation up to £1 million.
Yeah, which hilarious.
It's all getting orchestrated by the LMA, which they don't have jurisdiction up here.
No.
So God knows what they're thinking. And Dave King said that he was exploring options for us to get compensation. Also, I think that's a big mistake if we do, to be honest, because you can't have the two things. You can't say, well, we're allowing you to resign under these conditions, then flip-flopping your answer about...
It basically makes Mark Warburton look really stupid.
Aye.
Now, because, after all the bullshit, and it was bullshit, saying, we didn't resign, and then, that was the club that he was rumoured to have been, approach him, and that was the club that he wanted to leave for, and he says, no, that didn't happen, and then, within a matter of weeks, you see suddenly, he's down, as the manager there. Absolutely ridiculous. Just bullshit after bullshit, Derek, isn't it? And it really does make him look really, really stupid that he went ahead with all of that, saying that he didn't resign and all of that, because quite clearly he has, orchestrated all this to get away from Rangers. Like we've said, there's not been a lot of people have complained about him going. Vast majority of folk were quite happy just with the way the team was playing that he did go. But it just the whole thing's not a farce, and it makes him look really, really, really foolish, the fact that he is now in charge there, and that was the club that he was linked to and everything, so.
Yep. Just the last piece of Rangers news here. Halliday got injured in the Old Firm game, so he's ruled out for a month. So that's certainly not a bad thing, I think, considering the way he was playing. Again, we don't know how much that was down to the previous regime. So
yeah, I know he was on also, as I say, when I was watching the whole thing about Rangers on Sky. Yeah, it was him that had been speaking to the reporters there, and he certainly seems also very upbeat. I think he knows as well. He basically said in his opinion that any move away from Rangers is a step down in his career. we've never questioned his loyalty to the club, Derek. You know, we all know he is a supporter, but you know, by his standards as well, he's been very, very poor this season, very poor. But so have a lot of the other players, so we've got to give him the benefit of the doubt as well. It's a clean slate for all the players, and just again have to wait and see what the manager's got in store. Maybe there's going to be a lot of players that will see the best of them now. I really hope so. Just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
What, the other thing I was going to ask you, Derek, you were at the match against Hamilton, is that right?
Yeah.
What is all of this happening at Ibrox with regards to the parking? The last time that I was there, when I met you, I drove. And I says, oh, this is a nightmare. If I was going to date again, I would go in the supporters bus. But I can see now that there's like loads of parking restrictions being put in place, and I would be feared to go and park in case I had been parked in the wrong street or whatever. Or is it the fact that are they now coning everywhere off, or is it just going to be the fact that if you park in the wrong street, you're going to get towed away? Or what's
happening? Don't know. There's all the plans are on Glasgow City Council's website, and they're doing the same for Parkhead as well. And arguably it's maybe even worse for them, given the fact that they've not got a subway, so their transport links are worse. But it is another money making scheme, and I don't even know how many complaints, if any, that have been from local residents. But it's around residential areas, they're restricting parking for big events and match days. I don't know what the situation is. I think it's for residents only. I don't know if you can buy parking permits. It doesn't affect me because where I park, there's no restrictions going to be put in place. And right. I'm not saying where I park because I'm not one of everyone else to park there. So
I don't know if it, I mean, the street that I park on, Derek, usually always when I drive through, is the street further down. That the Loudoun Tavern is on across from the subway entrance. You know, if you were to come out of the Loudoun and turn right, I usually park down that street or at the end of that street, turning right again. So it certainly sounds to me as if that might be an area that's affected by it all, because it is basically right outside sort of local residents' houses and stuff. So,
But I mean, it's one of these things where I don't know where the council have came from with this one. It's, you know, it's been like this for you know, years as far as I'm aware. It's came out of nowhere and they've decided to do it now. I don't know if it's a toe of the caraway, to be honest.
I don't know, Derek, because I know in Edinburgh city centre, cars get towed away constantly on match days, roundabouts or Easter Road and things like that.
That's to protect the cars, that's all.
But there is, though, Edinburgh's a nightmare for it, and there's constant cars getting towed away there.
It's one of these things that I really hope the club have strongly put a case against this. And I know that Club 1872 had put something in, but they just got a token gesture email back. I hope the club have really put their objections into this, because it's going to adversely affect, you know, people coming to games just, oh, right, I'll just go to the game the day if this ticket's free and things like that. It's different for, I mean, it would certainly put me buying a season ticket where I buy it into perspective, because I'm the best part of £500. I'm not really bothered about the travelling cost because I travel by car, but if I had to then go via subway every time, it's a lot.
Yep.
I mean, from the time it takes me to get from out of Ibrox to Glasgow city centre so that I can go and get the train back home, I'm already home normally if I'm driving. So then you're talking about an extra train ticket, so there's, you know, another fiver. You're talking about your you know, subway on top of that, there's about £3.50. So you're talking, you know, £8, £9 an extra a game.
Just remember, Derek, it is Glasgow City Council.
Well, yeah.
We'll not say any more about that. But, I thought that you might know what you know the details about it were, but the next time that I'm travelling through, I did sort of promise myself the last time I would be going back on the supporters bus rather than driving, because it was a bloody nightmare the last time. So genuinely interested to see if you knew what the restrictions were and stuff like that. But if you hear anything, you can certainly let me know.
Yep. Last few bits and pieces, just other football here. BT Sport are planning a £31 million deal to get all the Scottish Premiership games. It's good in the sense that it'll be coming under one banner rather than having to buy two subscriptions. Well, not that I do, but it's better for the fans that way. But does it really need to be BT Sport?
Oh, just because of one man.
Well, no, it's the whole setup. It's fucking shocking. Anyway, I don't see why the SPFL and the SFA just can't scrap the deals, let them run to the expiry, and then allow the clubs to go on their own, like Rangers TV, like Celtic TV. There's bound to be a model in place where they could still get fans through the door, charge maybe fans a wee bit less for season tickets, but then charge people £250, a season to watch home and away games. You could easily do that. The likely reason why they're not able to do that is because there'll be no money in it for sponsorship and things like
exactly.
that for the SPFL.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is, Derek. Yep. Exactly.
Last two bits of football news here is former Rangers player David Templeton has signed a deal with Hamilton until the end of the season.
Yep.
And last bit here is another former player, Airdrie player Kyle Hutton, was given a second yellow card and sent off in the game against Albion Rovers after Airdrie scored an injury time winner. The reason? He got his second yellow card for excessively celebrated in the face of the Albion Rovers player.
Is that right?
So it's shades of Halliday getting sent off, just for raising his arm there.
Exactly.
So, rules going mad.
Yep.
So it's at that time of the pod again. So in the last kind of pod, we talked about the guy who got crushed to death by his stash of porn.
Yes, I remember that, yep.
Here I've found a story here about other strange ways of dying when they're involved in some relation, shall we say.
Okay.
Eaten by a lion after romping in the bush. In 2013, a Zimbabwean news website reported that a couple were attacked by a lion after having sex in the brush. Not in the bush, sorry.
In the brush.
The big cat killed Sharawe Marawe after interrupting the couple, although her unidentified lover managed to run away before he could be killed. After notifying the police, the male lover, who escaped wearing only a condom, found the woman's mauled body at the scene of the attack.
Wearing only a condom.
I'm surprised I never slipped off.
At least they were protection, Derek.
Well,
yeah,
exactly, aye.
Exactly.
Just not from lions. That should be Durex's new thing. Protection from lions.
Oh, dear.
I think we may have covered this before, but smothered to death by lover's breasts.
Oh, what a way to go, Derek. What a way to go.
Donna Lang, 51, smothered her lover to death inside a mobile home. The intoxicated woman from Washington claimed that she didn't know how the man died, although a witness claimed to have seen her crush his face with her chest.
What a way to go. He died with a smile on his face, Derek.
And the last one here, policeman cops it during a threesome. A cop died in 2009 when his heart gave during a threesome, and his wife sued the doctor for not warning him against having sex. William Martinez, a 31-year-old Atlanta police officer, died while having sex with another woman and a male friend, but his wife won $3 million after suing his doctor for not warning him that he had a weak heart and should avoid strenuous activities.
Okay. That didn't give it to say with that.
And that about wraps it up.
Good stuff.
So that's it for this episode of the iReady podcast. As I said, we will try and be back after the game on the 15th, but before the game against Celtic. So that'll be about that.
Yes, like we said, Derek, I'm now feeling very positive. I'm looking forward to the game on Saturday. Here's hoping they can get another performance like they did in the last match against Hamilton.
Yes. Sorry, I was listening to something else there.
That's all right. There's nothing new there, really.
No. Okay, thanks for listening, and bye.
Okay, take care, everyone. Goodbye.
How the fuck can we do a 2-hour podcast when we've only got two games?
Because we're just talking shite.
Well, why?